Vice President Pence was the head of the coronavirus task force originally. Trump seemed to sort of take it over from him.
President Trump continues his hospital stay for COVID. It's Tuesday, October 6th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Electoral College controversy, counting Americans, COVID in the Philippines, scorching wildfires, and virtual virus containment. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The health watch on President Donald Trump remains the focus of the world after he and several of those in his inner circle, including First Lady Melania Trump, tested positive for the novel coronavirus. A short time ago, his press secretary joined the list of positive COVID results. The president remains at Walter Reed Medical Center just outside Washington. Doctors have given little information other than to say he's doing well and is being given a five-day regimen of remdesivir, has been administered oxygen, steroids, and antibodies. The president made a brief appearance Sunday riding in a short motorcade outside the hospital to wave to well-wishers gathered along the road. One question is how the president's health status will change the race for the White House just a month before Election Day. It also throws a much brighter light on the vice president and whether or not Mike Pence will have to assume power. It also puts Democratic Senator Kamala Harris into greater prominence, as she would become vice president should she and 77-year-old Joe Biden win the November 3rd election. Pence and Harris are scheduled to face off in their one and only debate Wednesday in Salt Lake City, Utah. For many reasons, that debate may be more interesting and watchable than a typical presidential or vice presidential debate. VOA's Steve Reddish takes a look.
It is considered the political undercard, the vice presidential debate.
I think vice presidential debates often are more interesting to watch. The stakes are lower. The participants feel a little freer to say and do what they want.
Wednesday's debate between Republican Vice President Mike Pence and Democratic Senator Kamala Harris has multiple storylines that make it more interesting and watchable.
The historic nature of Kamala Harris's nomination and the fact that a woman of color, first woman of color on a major party ticket, will be debating.
Geraldine Ferraro was the first woman to participate in a vice presidential debate, facing George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan's running mate, in 1984.
So I remember there being tremendous concern about the way Vice President Bush should debate the first female on a presidential ticket. And he could be at times a very competitive man and certainly was a very good debater, knew his material very well, but didn't want to look as though he was bullying her in any way.
In 2008, voters were eager to see Sarah Palin debate Joe Biden.
The expectations for that Biden-Palin vice presidential debate were so great. It's the only time in presidential debate history that the vice presidential debate outdrew, had more viewers than the top of the ticket presidential debates. And those top of the ticket debates were not snoozers because they included Barack Obama in terms of historic debates.
Now, President Trump's COVID diagnosis is increasing already high expectations for the Pence-Harris debate.
Vice President Pence was the head of the coronavirus task force originally. Trump seemed to sort of take it over from him. But certainly the Harris campaign will be going right for Pence on coronavirus concerns and talk about all the things that they think he did to not handle this as well as he could have.
Mary Kate Carey is a senior fellow at the University of Virginia's Miller Center.
She's got a reputation for being a very aggressive questioner in the Senate Judiciary Committee. She's known for sort of laying these traps and trying to bait people to respond. So she will be a very formidable debater, I think. Pence, on the other hand, is a pretty unflappable guy to the point of sometimes not being very animated at all. The chances of him falling into any sort of trap are pretty small. But I also think he's got an audience of one.
His illness aside, President Trump is age 74. Joe Biden is 77. This vice presidential debate has future implications.
If Mike Pence has another good debate in 2020, as he did 4 years ago, then that really helps strengthen his position as the Republican nominee in 2024. And the same with Kamala Harris, who's obviously, you know, young enough to have a long-term ambition here.
But too much focus on 4 years from now risks losing sight of the main debate objective: defend the presidential candidate they are running with.
I think that we'll see, Kamala Harris prosecuting why the Trump should not be returned to office, and then Pence having to defend the record for the past 4 years. And so that will be, I think, an interesting debate to watch.
The vice presidential candidates meet Wednesday evening in Salt Lake City, Utah. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. New Caledonia votes to remain French. Why U.S. Arms Control Envoy made a beeline for Vietnam on brief Asia trip. Millions of Afghan children out of school. Ghani faces backlash over disputed remarks. Attack kills 8 in Afghanistan as president visits Doha. Uyghur couple, officials article, confirm China's ban on Islamic marriage vow. Expanded coverage of all these stories, and of course so much more, are found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia. Stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. During last Tuesday's raucous presidential debate, President Donald Trump warned he would not go along with an election result based on mail-in ballots he alleges are fraudulent. To prevent the spread of the deadly coronavirus, some states have expanded voting by mail, and polling indicates significantly more Democrats than Republicans are relying on this method to cast their ballots. In addition to the likely possibility Trump will challenge the election results in court if he loses, VOA's Brian Patton reports there are growing concerns his campaign will also try to persuade the Electoral College to overturn the popular vote in states where Democratic candidate Joe Biden is deemed the winner.
At the end of Tuesday's presidential debate, the two major political party candidates were asked if they would refrain from declaring victory until the election results were independently certified. Democratic candidate Joe Biden agreed.
Once the winner is declared after all the ballots are counted, all the votes are counted, that'll be the end of it. That'll be the end of it. And if it's me, in fact, fine. If it's not me, I'll support the outcome.
But President Trump equivocated and repeated unsubstantiated charges of massive fraud from mail-in votes that could undermine the election.
I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that.
However, Trump's own FBI director, Christopher Wray, has said there is no evidence of widespread mail-in voter fraud this year. Trailing in the polls, Trump has indicated his campaign will mount legal challenges to contest mail-in ballots if he does not win, challenges that could end up being decided by the Supreme Court. Meantime, the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is being pushed through the Senate by the president and his party. There is also reporting that Trump, citing voter fraud, may ask Republican-led state governments to override the popular vote in the Electoral College if Biden wins. The Trump campaign has denied these reports. In the Electoral College, established over 200 years ago, state legislatures use the outcome of the popular vote to select electors from the victorious party who then cast the official ballots on behalf of the population of their respective states. Overriding the popular vote, analysts say, could greatly undermine public confidence in democracy itself.
And that you could see then enrage many of its citizens who had voted and anticipated that their votes would count.
The Electoral College has become increasingly controversial after declaring George W. Bush the winner of the 2000 presidential election, and then again in 2016, awarding Donald Trump the presidency, even though both lost the national popular vote. While many Democrats now advocate for abolishing the Electoral College, Republicans defend this indirect voting system because it allocates proportionally more electors to rural states.
So that means candidates have to try to appeal to a much broader, wider segment of the American populace rather than just going to the big cities and campaigning there.
This potential new Electoral College controversy over mail-in voting, analysts say, could end up producing no clear winner. In that case, the House of Representatives would be called upon to choose the next president. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's army chiefs met for the first time after a reshuffle, while months of pro-democracy demonstrators have demanded the military step away from politics and called for the resignation of Thai Prime Minister and former junta general Prayut Chan-o-cha. Stay up to date with VOA and VOA 60. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today on VOA Asia. As the Census 2020 deadline in the United States approaches, a federal judge has ordered the U.S. Census Bureau to halt plans to wind down its in-person operations for the time being. The census, which is conducted in the United States every 10 years, helps determine how hundreds of billions of dollars in federal funding is distributed and how many congressional seats each state gets in a process known as apportionment. Maria Prue has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
This is how New Yorkers are encouraged to take part in the National Census 2020.
Right now, we're making sure we're reaching out to the community, that they have all the information in multiple languages to fill out the census, so we can make sure we get everyone counted. We have very low, low numbers in some of these neighborhoods, especially with people that speak English as a second language.
As of September 13th, the Census Bureau has reached over 90% of U.S. households, but less than 70% of Americans have filled out their census forms. The census questionnaire can be filled out online, by mail, over the phone, or during a follow-up visit by a Bureau representative. But because of the coronavirus pandemic, the Bureau was forced to suspend its field operations in March and April.
I didn't participate.
Why not?
I didn't have no way to call.
To account for the pandemic, the deadline for finishing the headcount was postponed from July 31st to October 31st. The agency later changed that date to September 30th. Shortly after, a federal judge ordered the Bureau to stop observing that September 30th deadline after a number of cities, counties, and civil rights groups complained the earlier deadline would produce an inaccurate count, especially of minority communities.
It is power and it is money for your community. If you don't fill out the census, then you don't get your fair share of $1.5 trillion yearly for housing, for food, for schools, for transportation. It's representation. The numbers are based for your representation. So it's your representation in Congress all the way to the school board.
The once-a-decade national census helps determine how $1.5 trillion in federal funding is distributed and how many congressional seats each state gets in a process known as apportionment. The more populous states like California and New York get a lot more representatives than rural states like Wyoming and Vermont. The census seems fairly straightforward, but it's not without controversy. The Constitution mandates that the census count everyone in the U.S., which would include non-citizens. This doesn't sit well with many who think only citizens should be counted. According to Pew Research, if unauthorized immigrants were excluded from the apportionment count, California, Florida, and Texas would each end up with one less congressional seat. Census workers and local politicians say being counted is important because it means more federal money for individual communities.
So regardless, if you're a citizen or if you're undocumented, if you are working at a restaurant in a neighborhood or you're living in that neighborhood, we need to know. And we need to know, because we need to know how many people need the resources.
The 2020 census questionnaire takes about 10 minutes to complete and includes basic questions about oneself and other household members. It is one of the simple ways that citizens can ensure the government is working for them. For Maria Prus in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Malaysia's flagship budget airline, Air Asia Group, is ceasing its Japanese operations. The airline said it has been notified that the board of directors of its majority-owned subsidiary, Air Asia Japan, decided to cease operations due to the impact of the pandemic. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The Philippines has less than 1% of reported coronavirus cases, with just over 319,000 currently, according to data from the Johns Hopkins University. Social distancing guidelines, however, remain in effect in the country. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports on a religious celebration there that went mobile amid the pandemic.
Sunday in Manila, take part in the annual observance of World Animal Day. A Catholic priest wearing a mask blessed pets in the capital city as the animals and their owners stayed in their vehicles.
It's very important for us then to have our pet blessed, because we feel like our pet talaga is really part of our family. And of course, we really want the best for his health too. And that's why we decided to join the pet blessing for today.
The priest sprinkled holy water on pets in this drive-through religious ceremony. It was all part of a celebration dating back almost a century, with a stated goal to improve animal welfare around the world. Fears of coronavirus contagion, however, changed the ceremony's blueprint. Event organizer, Richie Pascual.
But this time around, as mentioned, we have to adapt to the new normal. And the pandemic should never stop us from paying tribute to the furry animals that we have.
Animal activist Heinrich Zimmermann organized the first World Animal Day, held in Berlin in 1925. In 1929, the official date changed to October 4th, a day Catholics celebrate the feast of St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, it's another devastating year of wildfires in the American West. More than 1.5 million hectares have burned in California so far, shattering the previous record. As wildfires continue to worsen under the influence of climate change, one project offers hope on how to begin to confront a problem of enormous proportions. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
In 2014, California's King Fire blackened 400 square kilometers of forest. Massive erosion followed. One of Placer County's two reservoirs filled with sediment and had to be dredged, says County Water Chief Andy Fecko.
Every time we do that, it's a $5 to $7 million cost that you incur, and you're out of business during the whole time when you're trying to clear those facilities out. And so we incurred those costs several years in a row.
And he worried about the county's other reservoir, French Meadows, just a few kilometers away.
So it was one of these watersheds that was very much under threat of a high-intensity wildfire.
These devastating wildfires are on the rise in the West, experts say, as climate change dries out the forests. And a century of misguided management has left them overgrown and extra flammable. Across the West, the unintended consequences threaten reservoirs and their drinking water and hydropower, says Angel Hertzlet of the Nature Conservancy.
There's a growing understanding from water utilities in particular that their water quality, their water quantity is very much impacted by what's happening in the headwaters.
Thinning out the forest lowers the fire risk. The forest around the French Meadows Reservoir belongs to the U.S. Forest Service. But the agency has millions of hectares across the West that need thinning, says District Ranger Michael Woodbridge.
We're always doing as much as we can with the capacity we have. But French Meadows is kind of above and beyond what that capacity would have been.
So an unusual partnership formed. The Water Agency, the Nature Conservancy, state and local governments, and others all pitched in to do the planning, raise the money, and get the work done.
And we said, fantastic, if you guys can do that with us, then we can get this work done in this area.
The partners say they're going faster and doing more than any group could have done on its own. But it will still take years. With millions of hectares across the West at risk of fire and climate change turning up the heat, Water Agency Manager FECO says Placer County's reservoirs are a cautionary tale.
I want them to learn from our experience and start taking really aggressive steps in managing their own watersheds so they don't end up in the same boat that we're in currently.
Steve Barragona, VOA News.
With tens of thousands of new coronavirus cases daily in the United States, states are launching digital apps that alert a person if they've been exposed to someone who tested positive for the virus. Virginia recently rolled out a COVID exposure app that became instantly popular with residents. Health officials are trying to determine whether such apps will work to help slow virus transmission. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
We've said all along that our primary ways of fighting this virus include testing and contact tracing.
In August, the governor of Virginia delivered some promising news in the fight to contain COVID-19.
Virginia is proud to launch a new digital app called COVIDWISE.
Virginia is the first state in the U.S. to launch an exposure notification smartphone app in partnership with Apple and Google. With close to 500,000 downloads so far, more than 11% of the state's population, health officials here say the COVIDWISE app is a hit. But it's too soon to know how well the app will work to meet its chief goal, slowing the virus's spread in the state.
COVIDWISE protects your privacy.
Part of the app's appeal is that it's voluntary and anonymous, protecting people's privacy, says Jeff Stover, who oversees the project at the Virginia Department of Health.
COVIDWISE is a means of getting information out to people anonymously that they may have been exposed without the risk of, you know, identifying who the individuals were who actually were positive.
There's going to be a lot of factors that interact that will determine, you know, how many people in a community need to be using the app for it to actually be identifying cases that might not have otherwise been identified. And that's the goal.
If a user tests positive for the virus, they can report that result on their COVIDWISE app. Other users will be notified only if the two devices have been within 1.83 meters of each other for at least 15 minutes over the last 14 days. John Benner is one of the many Virginians who has downloaded the app.
When you have an epidemic going through a community, or in this case, the country and the world, the more information you can get, the better. And this just seemed to be a logical use of technology.
Many Virginians agree and have already downloaded the app out of a sense of duty.
This was billed as something you can trust, and I accept it.
But not everyone is so trusting.
The reason I haven't is mostly with privacy concerns.
Jeff Stover says he and his team are working hard to address those concerns.
Privacy and confidentiality is something that we knew we would be confronting from day one. So we have a marketing and PR firm that we hired locally. We're doing our best to reach out to those communities.
While the app is not a silver bullet, Stover says it's one more tool to help contain the virus.
For all the people who are downloading this app, you know, we are averting more infections. We're averting more deaths. We're averting more hospitalizations. We're allowing people to get tested sooner.
Time will tell if it allows people to move about more safely and with greater confidence. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us for VOA Asia. Continue online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all under the name VOA Asia. We'd also like to thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.